Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I am your host, Deborah Kammer Hines, and today's conversation is with Jolene Loria Sullins, Deputy Assistant Attorney General and Controller at the U.S. Department of Justice. Also joining me from IBM is Angela Carrington.
Jolene, you are designated as your agency's Performance Improvement Officer, a position created by executive order in the previous administration. What responsibilities does this entail? Are these new responsibilities, or did the executive order merely formalize what you had done previously?
That's a good question. I started out the interview by talking about performance outcomes. I pulled those statements from what we call the Performance and Accountability Report that every federal agency is required to transmit. Previously, as the controller, had the role to oversee the performance aspects of the budget, as well as the budget aspects and the accounting aspects. So before the executive order, I did all the functions that are now what we would say codified in the executive order. So the only new thing that happened in terms of real change in my role is that now I'm codified. I'm codified in the executive order. The duties and the responsibilities that I do, they have a higher standard in the government. They have a higher stature. But to be honest, they were things that we were already doing under the former administration's budget and performance integration and the performance integration councils that we had previously, that I sat on and that I was the co-chair on. So the good news is, I think it's a good news that I'm codified. The reason that I'm excited about it is because this is the part of what I would say the financial management budget and reporting that gets to the outcome, why we do what we do, why we count our pennies and why we get money for the mission of the Justice Department. It is for the performance aspect. It is to, you know, apprehend fugitives of the law. It is to investigate crimes and prosecute. So if we can't do that well and we don't have the appropriate metrics that can sell to the American people and tell you what we do for a living, then I think that we've sort of lost the game. So to me, it's the most interesting aspect of my job. And I think it's a perfect fit for somebody that oversees those aspects of the Department of Justice. So I'm glad that as the controller that I also have the title of Performance Improvement Officer, because I have the ability to impact and oversee many of the aspects of that executive order. So the executive order, I would say, you know, strengthen the existing laws and the mechanisms for measuring performance and tries to keep alive the Government Performance and Results Act, which we know was over a decade ago. I think it was a good thing. It's one of those, you know, everyone wonders in a transition what stays and what goes. I think this executive order was probably promoted by career bureaucrats and well supported because it's the right thing to do. So the department's performance improvement officer, what do? I supervise and coordinate the performance management activities of the department. We have to improve our goals, our measurements, and how we go about telling our story. The first task of the Performance Improvement Council that we were given was to have the Attorney General come up with 5 or 6 high-priority goals that we're going to deliver to the American people in the next 12 to 24 months. The good news about having the Performance Improvement Officer role prior to the transition is that we were already thinking about how can we get ready for the new administration. We know we're not going to have all the same goals. We know we're not going to have all the same metrics. So we did a series of drills, zero-based review of all our measures. We looked at everything across the department. We said if we were asked, when the new people come in, what would be the measures that you would want to put on the table? What would they be? Pretend that we don't have to, you know, use the ones that we were reporting on previously. I would tell you in terms of change management, most of the members on my council were afraid to throw away their old stuff. They were afraid to stop counting something that years prior they said really didn't show outcome, really didn't show the performance of their organization, but it is what it is. Well, we persevered in sort of the zero-based review, and I would say, again, the first assignment that came across the council was come up with 4 to 6 high-priority performance goals. And that effort was then folded right into us kind of thinking out of the box in terms of what those would be for the new administration.
Thank you, Jolene. That's very interesting. As we all know, for the most part, work in the government is accomplished by not just individuals, but teams of employees. Would you elaborate on your approach to empowering your employees and teams to drive change?
One of the things I had always believed in is that first, you have to believe in your people, and you have to come in with an attitude that you can accomplish anything as long as your heart and your mind is in the right place. And if you lead with that sort of attitude and you impart that on your staff, then turn around and empower your team to go forward and do good things. So I'm always sort of the give it to your lead, give it to your team, and leave it to the experts to work on the program. I think that is the most important role of a senior executive is first to have the right people on the bus, have them understand the vision and the mission, but once they get it, let them do it. I can't tell you how many senior managers don't live that philosophy, don't empower their teams. I have a whole project management office that does the unified implementation. I don't second guess their technical expertise. I help them with their vision. I remove obstacles. But I can't tell you how they breathe the sigh of relief when every decision and every path that they put in front of me, I don't try to undo it or redo it or rethink it because that's what they do. And so I think that the most important aspect of empowering your team is to let them do their work and trust in their ability to do their work. It's your job to make sure you have the right people on those jobs, but once you have the right people on the jobs, it's very important to empower them to do their work. And so my approach is to ensure that the mission, the expectations are clearly aligned, and then set them on fire, let them go.
Jolene, we talked to many of our guests about collaboration and partnerships. What kind of partnerships are you developing now to improve operations or outcomes at Justice, and how may these partnerships change over time?
Well, I think I've readjusted my thinking on collaboration and partnerships because I could probably list, and I have listed for you, I've asked my staff to talk about that, more than 15 boards and councils and collaboration meetings that I participate in on. We have a lot of meetings in the government that are designed to be collaborative and impart information and basically establish partnerships. But when you step back from that and you listen to the customers, and I had an experience where I participated in an offsite. Some people I knew, some people I didn't know. It was a management one-day offsite, and they didn't necessarily know who I was in relationship to the comments that they were making. They were talking about information that the department should do, information that should be imparted, things that we should share across the department that I would tell you we already share in those forums. So without being indignant about the comments, I took that as a point of reference for me, and it made me realize that my view to collaboration and partnerships is to do them off turf, off the formal setting, and meet somebody for coffee, meet them for lunch, and talk about the common challenges and the visions that you share. I find that small group, individual, off turf collaborations and partnerships, forums that do that for you, like this one that I participated on, I think are more effective because you don't have necessarily a set agenda, but two people are coming together and trying to get to know each other from a trust and common vision perspective and not from positioning at a meeting or the department's telling you this, what do you think about that? So my new philosophy on this collaboration and partnership is to develop more ad hoc opportunities to get out and talk to the people that I'm working with. So as an example, the fellow CFOs around the department making more time to get out of the office and collaborate with them, talk about things that we can commonly do together, but not on a script. Because I don't think that works as well as just kind of getting together and sharing common ground.
Do you think the same thing applies across the government as well? So would you take that same tack when working with your colleagues in other agencies?
I think it does apply. I think that nothing replaces getting to know the people that you're working with. I remember way back when I had a management training conference, they talked about the value of getting up from away from your desk and just asking your employee, hey, would you like to get a coffee or would you like to get a tea? And just spending that 5 minutes connecting with your employee, connecting with the person and getting to know a little bit more about the person. I think the same applies across government. Until you really know the people that you're dealing with, it's kind of hard to collaborate. I think that it applies getting out, finding opportunities to talk with the people that you're going to be working officially with is a good thing to do.
What does the future hold for DOJ's financial management modernization efforts? We will ask Jolene Loria Sullins, Deputy Assistant Attorney General and Controller at the U.S. Department of Justice, to share with us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.